This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, family. This is Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm sitting in. Phones are down. Spirits are up. Democracy has hope, largely because of you. If you do have things that you want to say, you can tweet at me. I am at Jefferson D. Smith. You can also find us on YouTube and subscribe to Tom on YouTube. It's a good way to watch the show. Lots and lots and more people are doing it. Lots of people say it's a good way to do it. You can also check us out on radio stations around the country. I got a question from her at is Abolish ICE. And she had several points, but one of them, what are your thoughts on people being vegan versus eating meat? You have asked this question at a great and terrible time, Abolish ICE. I am having a moral struggle about it. Literally this week. I am someone, and I grew up, particularly like in my high school and college years, kind of a jerk. Got in fights. Used to headbutt people on the basketball court. Hit a girl one time. I've done stuff I'm not proud of. And as I recognize that our only salvation is in trying to be better, I've tried to work on my own toxic masculinity and work on my own contribution to a culture of violence and oppression. And literally this week, it's not the only time I thought about it, but this week I've been thinking about it a lot more. And I listened to an interview with a woman who wrote the book, Why Do We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows? By the way, I love meat. I worked as a cattle hand. I'm a big guy. I'm about 6'4", weigh over 230 pounds. And I like meat. And I love my dog. And I have not yet found a moral principle that I am willing to, that I'm comfortable embracing that helps me differentiate between my genuine love of animals, including my own animals, and my willingness, even glee and delight in consuming them. I don't have a moral principle. It is where I've landed for today is to try to eat a lot less meat. I haven't yet gone vegan. I'm not yet ready to make that pledge because I don't think I'd be able to keep the promise. Not yet, at least. But I have something else to say about vegans. Thank you. Not only thank you for not contributing as much to climate change as I do, not only thank you for demonstrating a more consistent moral principle, but also just thank you for being kind of cool about it. Because I have to think, if I were a vegan, if I had landed firmly on the notion that I am dancing with now, that my consumption of meat is cruel, is mean, is contributing to bad stuff, then if I landed there, I think I would talk about it all the time. I think I would be like the evangelical Christian who is constantly asking people to find Jesus. I would be telling people every time they had a slice of bacon, do you know that pigs can see themselves in the mirror? Most animals can't. Pigs can. Enjoy your bacon. I'd be telling stories about cows can be really nice and can bond with other living things. And the fact that the vegans I know don't do that all the time, it like demonstrates they're like better people than I am. Because they like let us get away with something that is somewhat questionable for our health, for the health of our for the health of our country, for the health of our climate, and morally. So I don't know, but Abolish ICE, that's my answer to your tweeted question. Marsha Sherman tweeted in, if you didn't see U.S. Representative Bill Pascrell, 9th District of New Jersey, speech yesterday reading directly from the Steele dossier, please take the time to hear it. A wealth of info in the past 8 years, the Trump-Russia connection, soon to be made public. Thank you very much, Marsha Sherman. You can tweet me at Jefferson D. Smith. Pat Mobley. Thank you, Pat Mobley. Somebody saying, please don't read my text on air. Okay, I won't. But I appreciate the kind thing that you said. Susan Johnson, Supposedly, RNC was also hacked, but nothing leaked. Could Russia have a lot of goods on them? This is a good question, Susan, that there is, that there are lots of steps in this. And because there are lots of steps, it makes it feel even more obvious to me, or at least, I'll go the other way. It feels so fishy for anyone to say, well, it was sort of a coincidence. It is hard for me to understand sometimes how the Red Wall holds together. How the folks who are fighting for a non-majoritarian, anti-majoritarian government, being fed information by a legion of talk radio, which helped begat, which helped foment and generate the listening group that became the viewer group of Fox News that Barry Diller helped exploit. It is hard for me to understand how the Red Wall is able to maintain the cognitive dissonance, and that's despite understanding and knowing a good deal of psychology. It is hard for me to understand how they maintain all of the bricks in that Red Wall. How could it be all a coincidence? Holy mackerel. I got another good Grateful Dead. I can't read all the lyrics of Grateful Dead, in part because I just think I would be doing damage. Maybe, I don't know if there'd be licensing concerns, but I also just doing damage to their art form. I can do snippets. Non-judicial precedence from Sunday Belander. Everyone is complaining about the courts and their arbitrary rulings. Why is there never any mention of non-judicial precedence? Little seemingly unimportant issues in little backwater towns are increasingly used to manipulate and influence the higher courts. When the powers that be are facing unpopular issues, it is easier to go through the back doors rather than head on. Scalia was touted as a strict constitutionalist. Behind closed doors, he was teaching the up-and-comers how to circumvent the law. Non-judicial rulings was one of those avenues. I have firsthand experience with setting precedents. Because of me, there are two on their list of quotable rulings. I no longer dabble in activism. When I asked for their support, all I got was join our mission, support our causes. The email goes on, I will pause there. This one is getting obvious, right? The Federalist Society, Scalia, Thomas, and now almost majority, and maybe soon to be majority of the court, if Susan Collins doesn't listen to her conscience, is been making the case they are strict constitutionalists. That was a farce from the beginning, and it is more obviously a farce now. Here is the example to me that is most clear and become even clearer. It is historical. This court is looking more and more like the Lochner court, the Lochner era court, which came up with substantive due process. The idea of the due process clause of the Constitution had elements within it that would preclude majoritarian, congressional, small d, democratic government power. Where Article 3, the article of the Constitution that has the Supreme Court in it, interpreting the Constitution to say the due process clause limits congressional article, Article 1. And that limitation was called substantive due process, and it became discredited. The FDR tried to expand the court. He was accused of packing the court. My argument now is the court has been packed. There is a fair argument now about whether it should be expanded. Its number of seats is not in the Constitution. It could be 12. That is what most juries are. And FDR was getting limited New Deal reforms by the Lochner era court, by substantive due process, by conservative judges saying, aha, there. What we are seeing now, there was no constitutionalist honor or precedential deference to the Voting Rights Act when they got rid of it. There was no deference to Congress, to the limited role of courts. When they strip union rights just recently, this is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. You're you. And thanks for being here. Thank you, Free Speech TV. Here is, Nate Atwell has, now has played for us in our breaks, Les Miserables. Nate, we are not allowed to play the whole song, but I believe we are allowed to play a brief portion of it. Could we play just a little bit as you were dazzling us? before? Is that possible?
I'm not a legal expert.
No, we can play 20 seconds. I mean, are you technologically capable of doing that? Are we able to do that?
Technologically.
But you're scared?
If
I click this, it's going to play? All right. I didn't think I got to control anything like that. Well, while we're doing that, we were going to play the One Day More song. I realize now he's thinking I'll play it off my laptop. Maybe I will. Tomorrow is Bastille Day. Bastille Day, the 14th of July, 1789. It was a turning point in the French Revolution. And remember, France is our oldest ally. We have a special relationship with the Brexiteers, but we wouldn't probably have a country if it weren't for the French. And the French wrestled with their own liberation, their own setting aside of monarchy, and Bastille Day, the storming of the Bastille, celebrated the unity of the French people on the 14th of July, the very next year in 1790. And on Friday the 13th, as we battle in favor of democracy, we can remember that one day more, it is Bastille Day. Here is from Les Perkins. Many or most of us get mailers from the Democratic Party organization asking for donations. Don't throw them away. I answer every one of them. I don't always make contributions, but I ask them to be progressive. I also enclose a graphic. He responds to the DNC. Courtney Wagner, the diversity of America. Talk radio junkie, she says. The ideas were deconstructed as a salad bowl versus a pot of soup. Speaking of the two predominant opposing views in America today, one that we should build walls, lock up shop, and keep America white. The other that we are better for the diversity of our people. Now consider a pot of soup. The attention and care it takes to build. One can't simply throw away every vegetable, set to simmer and walk away. The result would be a textureless, gelatinous disaster. Thank you for your support of a cup of soup for the melting pot of America, for us not only building walls, but building bridges and making soup. We appreciate it. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. Hey, everybody. This is Jefferson Smith. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for doing it. Thanks to the community that is building long-term vigilant resistance, and not only resisting, but being a positive force for democracy, love, and compassion. Shout out to Van Jones, hashtag Love Army. A topic I wanted to get to today was the, let's call it electric testimony of Agent Strzok and his interchange and back and forth with Trey Gowdy. The background of this, for people who don't watch or listen to a lot of right-wing media, might be lost on you. The background is that the whole narrative, the Trump and the Red Wall narrative, is that the Russian investigation is entirely trumped up by the deep state in order to take down a president they don't like because there's a liberal conspiracy that is oh so very powerful. The Democrats have been unable to hold a trifecta of power for anything but 4 years out of the last 37. And that they, the deep state, were exposed by text messages of Agent Strzok, where he offered criticism of Donald Trump. He also, by the way, offered criticism of Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and apparently voted for John Kasich of Ohio. for president. And he was critical of Donald Trump. And Trey Gowdy and the rest of the congressional committee called him in, and they were going to get him. They were going to get him and show how he was proof that the deep state was out to get Trump. And here is that interchange, and here is Agent Strzok.
Response to a series of events that included then-candidate Trump insulting the immigrant family of a fallen war hero. And my presumption, based on that horrible, disgusting behavior, that the American population would not elect anybody demonstrating that behavior to be president of the United States. It was in no way, unequivocally, any suggestion that me, the FBI, would take any action whatsoever to improperly impact the electoral process for any candidate. So I take great offense and I take great disagreement to your assertion of what that was or wasn't. As to the 100 million to one, that was clearly a statement made in jest and using hyperbole. I, of course, recognize that millions of Americans were likely to vote for candidate Trump. I acknowledge that is absolutely their right. That is what makes our democracy such a vibrant process that it is. But to suggest somehow that we can parse down the words of shorthand textual conversations like there's some contract for a car is simply not consistent with my or most people's use of text messaging. I can assure you, Mr. Chairman, at no time in any of these texts did those personal beliefs ever enter into the realm of any action I took. Furthermore, this isn't just me sitting here telling you. You don't have to take my word for it. At every step, at every investigative decision, there are multiple layers of people above me, the assistant director, executive assistant director, deputy director, and director of the FBI, and multiple layers of people below me, section chiefs, supervisors, unit chiefs, case agents, and analysts, all of whom were involved in all of these decisions. They would not tolerate any improper behavior in me any more than I would tolerate it in them. That is who we are as the FBI. And the suggestion that I, in some dark chamber somewhere in the FBI, would somehow cast aside all of these procedures, all of these safeguards, and somehow be able to do this is astounding to me. It simply couldn't happen. And the proposition that that is going on, that it might occur anywhere in the FBI, deeply corrodes what the FBI is in American society, the effectiveness of their mission, and it is deeply destructive.
What got cut off was the applause. He was done talking. That was Agent Strzok making two arguments. One, yeah, I thought when Donald Trump was talking trash about Gold Star family, that sucked. But I wouldn't let that infect me doing my job as a member of the FBI. That's not how I've lived my career, and I wouldn't accept it from other people. But even so, I am one piece of this bureaucracy. I'm one piece of the analysis that is happening. I am one gear in the machine. And do you really think that everybody above and below, from supervisors to section chiefs, would have encouraged me or allowed me to somehow disrupt the entire apparatus to lead and control the deep state? It's another lesson. Hearings that are televised are good for truth. When Hillary Clinton had a chance to answer questions about Benghazi, it was good for truth. When Agent Strzok got a chance to, what's up, Dave? It's good to see you. Not everybody, you're missing something if you're not seeing it on the screen, because the talented Dave Fulton is here trying to rescue he is a brilliant, wonderful soul. The exercise of congressional hearings, when we really want the truth to come out, are good, particularly when what you've got is questioners that are trying to prevaricate. And you have people who are testifying who are smart, who are articulate, and to have facts to offer. Open hearings have benefit. Open hearings have benefit. One of the challenges is that Strzok's little answer there, stuff that members of Congress, Republican members of Congress said, that got played on Fox News and tweeted out all over the place. But that little piece, well, what I saw more of when I was looking this morning was just Trey Gowdy talking and then not wanting to say that guy got his lunch handed to him when he was trying to bully an agent of the FBI. An agent of the FBI, of course, wishes and said that he regrets sending any text messages, but reminding that it doesn't really have anything to do with whether or not the president was in cahoots with the Russian state or agents of the Russian state to subvert democracy in the United States. It has nothing to do with that. It is merely a distraction. It is merely a way to maintain the red wall. It is just a story to tell. And we don't want to build that red wall. We do want to build bridges or, listening to Courtney, make some soup. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. We'll be back. We're taking a break. And by the way, thank you to the sponsors. And thank you to the members of our nonprofit stations. You make this stuff possible. Appreciate it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
You listen to the Tom Hartman Show. You can hit us on Twitter at Tom_Hartman or at Jefferson D. Smith. We are in the home stretch. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith sitting in. It is the day before Bastille Day. It is Friday the 13th, and I have big news. The big news I have is that Dave Fulton, for those of you watching on YouTube, for those of you watching on Free Speech TV, had a chance to see his head next to my shoulder, has miraculously fixed the phone service. And therefore, we have a precious few minutes where if you call 202-808-9925, I will say it again, 202-808-9925, we believe there is a greater than 50% chance that we will be able to take your call. I could be wrong. I'm not going to say it's Dave's fault if it doesn't happen, but he is a hero if it does happen. Wanted to give you that chance in case you wanted to call, but for those people who kindly and even dutifully sent in their messages, I have a few to get through. Thank you, Jeff Smith, for what you do. I'm a big fan of you. That's very nice. Okay. One point I would disagree with. It does matter how straight the gate. The menace of the years does find me afraid. I find myself searching online for the book, How to Survive in a Plutocracy, or Surviving the American Oligarchy. Point well taken. My question for you, what if there were a rule? He said was a rule, but it's were a rule. Conditioned contrary to fact requires a subjunctive mood. I don't know why I'm in the subjunctive mood today, but apparently I am. That outlined in clear, comprehensive, strict detail when a Supreme Court justice must be recused. There doesn't seem to be any fight back against these guys who think they're kings because they wear a robe. And some guy hollers, oh, yay, when they enter a room. There could be a way of fighting back against this branch of government that is clearly out of control. Do you think a law would survive or would have to be a constitutional amendment regarding the act of recusal? Does it have to be inflicted legally? Good question. A rule of recusal wouldn't have to be in the Constitution, but typically recusal rules are rules of the court. I haven't looked at precedent, and I would not pretend expertise on the question of whether if Congress passed a recusal rule, if the Supreme Court would have to abide by it. That said, the court that would review it would be, in fact, the Supreme Court. And so, because they are the highest court, there is no court. By virtue of being the highest court, it means there is no higher court. And I'm reminded of what Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. said when he said, what a judge will do is all I mean by law. And do I think that the Supreme Court would allow itself to be bound by Congress? My unfortunate answer is only maybe. Got another one. Please give us some commentary on your views concerning immigration. There's a long email that I'll read after the show, but here's a portion of it. What is our moral duty to these folks as we, less than 5% of the world's population, are producing a lion's share of the world's carbon pollution? So the first thing I'll say is that while I have had some allies and friends of mine who are leaders in the Native American community ask us to be careful saying we are a nation of immigrants, we are a nation including immigrants. And I think that we have to be both that and a nation of laws. A question I have is what should those laws be? And I still wrestle with that and am and have not yet seen the model immigration law, the model border law that I think makes the most sense, that would balance humanity and sensibility and movement of people. And I think we could have a debate about how does a welfare state intersect with immigration rules? It's an interesting question. But the essence of the point I think you make here, that we have an additional moral responsibility as we inflict harm on other nations, as we have been colonial in our relationship to other nations, as we pollute the world, that ought to be included. I think we also provide value in the world. There are both sides of that ledger. I am a patriot, if significantly because I believe democracy is our best chance and this lever has to be used in favor of democracy. That moral consideration of the harm that we cause needs to be added to our moral consideration of how we treat everyone, including people who want to come to this country. And I would say on the economics, it's pretty clear that we've got labor shortages. We should root for people who want to come here and do stuff. That's to the good. And I'll also cite the soup. We have a soup. We are strengthened. It's not a mythology. Humanity is literally strengthened. That in all of the ways, we are made better by expanding our horizons. That narrowness, that even Europe was harmed when they're harmed economically, when they started becoming more jingoistic and more ethnocentric. I am going to try to take a call. It is going to be an adventure, and we're going to try to take Paul from WCPT Ain't Afraid of Me. Paul, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Paul, you are our first caller. What's up, Paul? Speak your piece.
Okay, well, I want to talk about how the Republicans are using the word lie.
Yeah.
With regard to Peter Strzok's interview before Congress. The Republicans have been sporting around an ex-FBI agent on right-wing talk radio shows who used to work for Robert Mueller. And this guy's assertion is that the way Robert Mueller is setting up Donald Trump in a perjury trap is his tactic is something like this. If Robert Mueller were to ask a witness, what color was the car? And the person were to say, it was red. Then Robert Mueller would look up the manufacturer's code number for what the color of the car was and said, no, it was mauve. You lied. See, this is what they say about Robert Mueller. But if Peter Strzok says in a text message, Donald Trump won't win, we will stop them, they presume that the we is the FBI, not the American people. Another, and this is in a personal text message.
Yeah.
Another interesting way they used this with Hillary Clinton was, during the Benghazi investigation, they found an email from Hillary Clinton to Chelsea Clinton that said, I think this is terrorism. Therefore, when she said officially that this had to do with something else, it's a lie because she emailed Chelsea that she thinks it was a terrorism. But I can say, and almost everybody listening can say, that I will say things to my family, maybe email them about my job that I wouldn't say officially on my job.
Exactly. And I think to your deeper point, the word lie, the quick thing I'll say, and I'm going to try to take a bunch of calls in a row, the point on the use of the word lie is understand the game that is being played. And I had a back and forth with Talk Media News 2 days ago. And wonderful reporter from Talk Media News was saying that offering their own confusion about what was going on. I said, I'm not confused because I don't believe that the exercise that is happening with their use of words is an exercise in pursuit of truth, debate, or reason. That's not what's happening. It's not that they're violating the rules. It's that they're playing a different game, that words are a tool of power, and that's what's happening. And the liberal tradition they are fighting against is not the liberal the way people think of it. Oh, it's like not being racist as much or not being sexist as much or not thinking that only rich people should have stuff. But the liberal tradition of the pursuit of reason, and that too is under assault. And we should be aware of that and work against it, but we need not be confused by it. Rich, listening and watching on Free Speech TV. Hello, Rich.
Hey, I just want to thank you for being on. It's kind of nice to get a little fresh, different view, like the soup rendition that was spoken earlier. And I also like the musical renditions that people were putting out. And the Pink Floyd thing, I think we're all pipers at the gates of dawn.
Nice.
And we need to rise up and not think of Friday the 13th as bad and take the time to look deep in our hearts and make the right decisions.
And it's the day before Bastille Day. Karen on X-Ray FM, my home station, just named this week best radio station in Portland, fourth year in a row. Thank you to the people at X-Ray. Thank you to the staff at X-Ray. You are amazing, wonderful human beings. Karen, speak your piece.
Good morning, Jefferson. Well, Jefferson, I often agree with you, but on immigration, I do not. I think that you need to look at our foreign policy a lot more carefully and at our corporate policy a lot more carefully, as well as environmental policy, in order to evaluate what's moral or not relative to immigrants. You disappeared the School of the Americas. You've disappeared the role of corporations, say, in flooding Mexico with cheap grain and driving at least 2 million farmers out of corn growing, or the role of Walmart in driving small businesses out of business. And it's not so simple when you support death squads in El Salvador and a quarter to
who's
a...
Who's the you? Who's the you in this scenario?
The United States.
Got it. Well, I think your points are well taken.
How do you not know about the School of the Americas? How do you not know about stuff?
I do.
And because it causes refugees and asylum seekers, our policies
fair
are
point.
Wars. Look at the Middle East, for God's sake. What
no,
have
fair
we
point.
Done there that you're so proud of? Okay, honey. Well, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you so much.
No, that was good. Good to hear your voice, Karen. Thank you so much. You're listening to Tom Hartman Show. We'll be back with a few more of your calls right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jeff. We're back on the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. It's good to be with you. And thanks to everybody who watches and participates on Free Speech TV. James from Tyler, Texas, your turn.
You're so worried about the immigrants. You have descendants of slaves who've been here, haven't been taken care of. You're saying there's all these jobs people can't be in, but people are putting us in the penitentiary. That's why I can't understand. Why do you care so much about them? But you have a segment of your population that you're not even willing to talk to or take care of already. That's already here. So until you take care of them, no, go home and go back. And you sit there and hear our leaders sitting there say it all the time. Y'all may not know who they are. Yvette Carnell, Dr. Boyce Watkins. Tone Talks. There's this what's the guy that he's an economist? I can't remember his name right now. He's slipping my mind right now. But there's so many of us sitting there saying, "Listen to us."
So James, why for you is it either or?
Standardity. Because that's what it is for y'all.
But who's y'all in this scenario?
Y'all will take y'all's side, but y'all will never be on our side of people who are already here who are needing help.
Who's y'all in this scenario?
The progressives, so y'all call yourself.
So what are the positions you're hoping progressives take that they won't take because they're supporting more humane immigration policy?
It's not about being humane. You have a population like the lady just got from there saying you have a foreign policy that should be dealing with all that. You're talking about MS-13. What about Chicago?
What's the thing? But so I hear you want to go after progressives. That's fine. What's the thing that you want to promote?
I'm not going after you. I'm just sitting there saying, listen to what we're saying. Sandy Darity has a great study about population for black wealth versus white wealth.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get picked up. the way that it should be picked up. Yvette Carnell isn't
even
the way she should be listened to. And what I'm trying to sit there and tell y'all is y'all are so worried, the progressives are so worried about the outside stuff, the sin of slaves are being just looked over completely within every category. And at this time, we are really sick of it because it doesn't make any sense for us to back those agendas when we can't even get police protection, get new forms of way to treat black folks in the inner city. But we're worried about how we're going to treat some migrants who come over here illegally, but we've got to worry about how we're going to be treating them. But you can't even treat your own population that's already here. You can't even treat them good. You can't even talk about reparations for them. But you
are you there? James, you there? Forms.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would say, if you want to talk reparations, I'm down. If you want to talk wealth disparities, I let you speak your piece. Let me speak mine. You want to talk wealth disparities, you want to talk about the fact that aggregate wealth in the black community has not risen really since the Civil War. And I haven't seen a lot of 40 acres and I haven't seen a lot of mules. If you want to talk about the fact that entrenched poverty is being promoted by city planning, entrenched poverty is being promoted further by how we run our prison system, I'm down to talk about all that stuff. If you want to talk about,
but do.
Okay, so what's the do? This is a talk show.
The same way that they're doing on Fox News and the same way they do over there on CNN, the same way they do on MSNBC, nobody's taking those stories up. Nobody's talking about it. And that's
which is the story you want to make sure we get to?
I really just want to talk about stopping all immigration until our black population is taken care of.
All right. So that's where we disagree, because I don't think it has to be either or. I think if we're going to fight against oppression, we've got to try to fight against oppression in many forms. And I will not hold myself out as the most important observer of the highest priority elements of oppression. But I also don't want to only pick and choose and say we're only going to fight for this kind of salvation after we fought for this kind of salvation. That's where you and I disagree. I agree on the other stuff. This is Tom's show. I'm Jeff.
This is Tom Hartman's show. I'm Jeff. Yeah.
We are in the home stretch. We have a chance finally, thanks to the wonderful team here, of taking a few phone calls. We're going to try something right now. It's called Three at a Time. I'm going to take three calls. You're going to speak your piece. Keep it under 15 seconds if you possibly can. And then I'm going to respond to one or all of them after that. This way we'll be able to get through more calls since you've been bottled up the entire time. Let's start with James from Spokane. James, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? First of all, drain the swamp. You know what I'm saying? Pump it up. Pump it up. And then secondly, I want to say about this apprentice, mealy-mouthed president, we have DJ Trump. Hello?
Oh, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
Yeah, okay. The term mealy-mouthed is defined in the dictionary as euphemistic and insincere.
Yeah.
That's that man. And I'm telling you, DJ, if you know the term in music, I mean, it's a title.
Yeah.
He is so jive. DJ Trump suits him to the T.
DJ Trump. All right. Zach from Hollywood, California. Go ahead.
Yes, this is about when greed becomes so intoxicated with power that it becomes incompetent. The so-called conservative values are being exposed as fraudulent, and their incompetence in placing a bad, ineffective puppet who was known to be a 10-carat gold-plated fraud is blowing up in their face. The New Yorkers knew it, but they didn't see it coming that the Hicks would so thoroughly embrace a blowhard con man with a fake okay signs appealing to the most basic instinct that brown is bad, this shallow theme, this exercise in uncivility.
I appreciate your call. I want to go to John, Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to comment off the guy who just called in reference to he was setting up the argument for saying that about reparations and all that. I'm an African American, also retired veteran, 22 years in the military.
Thank you.
And I just don't accept his parameter, his argument, the parameters he set up in that argument, the either or reparations deal with like we can only chew bubble gum and we can't walk at the same time. It was just ridiculous in how he presented his argument. No African American in his true heart and soul can feel the way that he just expressed himself. I mean, I could hear his frustration in his voice about reparations and all that, but that's a totally different argument, a totally different situation. We can take care of that at the same time as maintaining our humanity and accepting and doing what we need to do, setting up legislative rules and barriers and policies to go and accept people who are coming from South America. And so,
there's almost nothing I could agree with more in the whole world. Johnny's still there. I think I cut you off.
Yeah, I'm still here.
If you want to finish your point, please do.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I've been deployed down in South America and all that, and I see the different cultures. An American is a person who makes an obligation to the Constitution. It doesn't matter what you look like. Doesn't matter what language you speak. It matters what you understand America to be and that you want to be a part of it. I mean, we come from Europe. We come from Asia. We come from all continents in the world. There's no reason why America, the richest, most powerful nation in the world, cannot do our due diligence and accept refugees who are fleeing a situation that initially it started by us. I mean, we have to take the responsibility. Europe's doing what they need to do. We need to take a responsibility in our own continent and make sure we take care of our people and maintain our humanity. What the Republicans are trying to do, or the conservative party or agency, is trying to make us separate. When you separate, we can't stand. I mean, if we stand together, we're more powerful. If we separate, we can't stand. We'll be sitting there bickering just like he is about the reparations, when we could be standing together and taking care of all that in one lump sum.
I wish I could have played a music bed under your call. There are very few things that could be said under God's green earth that I could have agreed with greater power. I appreciate your call so much, John, and thank you for your service and your participation here. Hector from Chicago.
How you doing? I just heard the gentleman, he was so upset at black people not having priority as far as jobs and over Mexicans. And the way I look at it is, you know, the Chinese came during the Ice Age, and every empire is a master of lies, and they want to simply say the Indians were all that were here, and it's old Mexico America is. So I know it sounds strange to put it that way.
Hector, I appreciate the call. I appreciate you taking the time. Mary, you're about to close us out.
Yes, I was wanting to make a comment about Congress yesterday and their words versus actions with that Peter Strzok and his text message.
Yeah.
My point is, when the Supreme Court made their ruling and Trump, on that Trump Muslim ban, and he said that his words about banning all Muslims, it didn't matter. It's what he did is what matters.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that apply to this here case also, as a ruling from the Supreme Court?
Yeah, but I think they're playing a different game. I think that they're not only playing a game of intellectual and legal and precedential consistency. I just think they're playing a little bit different game. Zach Hollywood, yeah. I think you got about 20 seconds. Oh, I was wrong. Here's what I want to say. I want to say thank you to everybody for being with this show, for being with Tom, for building a community of democracy, for being a community that, yeah, will, of course, disagree from time to time, but ultimately be on the side of justice, on the side of humanity, on the side of democracy. And I thank you. You're the coalition of the benevolent irrational, the good people doing good things for no good reason, but I would say for a very good reason, and you are priceless, worth a lot, not for sale. Tom will be back with you. And I've been really honored to be with you this week. Happy Bastille Day tomorrow. Happy 13th of Friday today.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.